All right, we're live, brother. Here we go. All right, so here we go. This is the very first taken intro of our very special podcast here for anyone who's going to be listening. Pleasure to have you guys here to the Journey to Earth podcast. We are your brotherly hosts here, Slicky Nicky and Matt Jambra, for the very first time coming at you from the Northeast. And our goal with this podcast is going to be to just uncover the world together and make the world a greener and better place, one podcast and one episode at a time. And we're just going to freaking shoot the crap here, have a great freaking time, and just teach you guys a little bit more about this planet that we all love and dearly share. So, Matt, what's going on, my man? How are you?
What's up, my dude? So I just want to say that this is, yeah, the first podcast, but it's also the first time I'm hearing Nick calling himself Slicky Nicky. So I will see how long this lasts.
It's going to be my new handle everywhere. Yeah, just at Slicky Nicky. Yeah. Get a little like QR code and put it on my back of my shirt.
I'm going to have to come up with something. I'll get you. Next time.
Yeah. Knowing me, I'm going to be up at like 1 o'clock in the morning and be like, we need like Matt's handle. We need to get this going. That's what I'll be staying awake on. Not like work. It'll be like, what is Matt's handle going to be next week?
Yeah. I have something in mind already. So
I'm a little too excited for that. Yeah. Like the weekend can just go past. I'm just ready for when we meet again. So I can see what Mr. Jamber calls himself next episode.
So how was your day, man? I know you were, you know, we were both talking just before this that, you know, things are kind of crazy with both of us.
Yeah. Things are a little insane. I'm really thankful for my job, but it's very busy. So just kind of doing the thing. Just trying to build a wooden journey on the side of my spare time and trying to make the world a greener place. But work's been really good. Going back down to DC this weekend. So that's going to be a nice 6.5-7 hour drive, but looking forward to exploring more down there. I'm having a good time with that. So
audiobooks, man, those audiobooks I was telling you about there. I'm telling you, you'll look forward to the drive. Audiobooks changed my life.
Dude, I was trying to find that Teddy
when
one.
I had it. I used to
on
have
Roosevelt.
A,
you got to send that to
oh
me.
God, it's so good. The Rise of Theodore. No, was it the Rise? Yeah. The Rise of Theodore Roosevelt, man. It was like the best audiobook. It was like, God, it was like 15 hours long or something.
Oh, it's
like
that long?
That.
Okay.
But I like,
that's a,
I,
that's
it's
good.
Long, but I flew through it because I, you know, I had an almost an hour and a half drive to work, you know, to and from. So I flew through that book. Whoa, and it was awesome. Okay. So that's a bear, but it's great.
Okay. Is that on Apple Pod? That can I download it there? Or is like, that's something I should get like Audible?
I got it off Audible. Audible. I got it on Audible. But, I mean, you can rent it from the library, actually. You can get the audio. Very cool.
Dude, I got to show you more of those photos because when I went to Theodore Roosevelt Island, I sent you a couple, but it's sick, dude. So, like, I didn't tell you the whole entrance. So, like, it's right in D.C., but Theodore Roosevelt Island, it's its own island in D.C., and, like, no cars are allowed on it. So the only way to get there, you have to, like, cross over a bridge for cars, obviously, park in the parking lot, but then there's a pedestrian bridge, and then you, like, go through the woods, and Teddy is, like, in the middle of, like, this little opening when you get in there, like, holding his fist up, and there's, like, there's four pillars behind him. One, it says like people, nature, like government and something else, or like wisdom. And it's got like, I believe it's quotes from him. And they're like all right behind him. Dude, it's sick. Like the second I got there, I'm like, Matt's got to see this. Like, this is freaking awesome. I got to show you more stuff.
I'm telling you, like I always heard, you know, obviously heard of Theodore Roosevelt, but like, honestly, when you learn like about how awesome and badass he was, like, it's just like, he's amazing. Still like my idol. I wish like if I can go back in time, you know that. Yeah. Like, if you can go back in time to visit anyone who ever lived on the planet, it would be
the guy
for sure, hands down.
And he was the one that went to. I know you told me a while ago, man, but when he went over to like the Adirondacks, right? Like he would do the crazy camping trips.
Yeah, was that's that when him? He found out he was. He would do that all the time.
So bad.
But yeah, that's when he found out he was going to be. He was on Mount Marcy when he found out he was going to be president.
Highest peak in New York, baby.
It was just. Yeah, and dude, think about this. Like, there were no phones, you know, no anything. So, like, a guy had to hike up the mountain to tell him that the other president just got shot, you know.
He's just like, I'm going to freaking go for it. Yeah.
So, it's just a wild thing to think of back then. I wish it was still kind of like that, to be honest. But, yeah, just that's a great read, you know, or listen to. I mean, I listened to it. It was just awesome.
I definitely got to find that, dude. I know, like, it was funny because you told me that after I went for the first time and like, I didn't know, like, I mean, I'm from Long Island. Like, I guess most of my friends know that, but these people listening probably don't, but like from Long Island, like no one talks about the Adirondacks, dude. Like it doesn't exist, you know, like it's still in New York State. And like, it's not that far. It's like 5-6 hours north. So like, you can still get up there, but like, it was funny. Like when I came up here for school, like in Western New York, like people's like, oh, you got to get to the Adirondacks. Like my old boss was telling me, I'm like, oh, like, you know, like I don't really hike a lot. Like I'm not used to that. Like Long Island is the last place you would go on a hike from, you know, like yeah. I never ventured out there. But then I went there and I'm like, holy crap. Like this is freaking crazy.
Yeah.
It's mind-blowing. Like, this is like the largest, I think that I read some stat. It's like the largest park in the continental U.S. like outside of Alaska, which is like mind boggling. Like, I don't know about this.
And I don't quote me on this, but I think it's also the youngest.
Really?
I think those that mountain wow. range. Yeah, I think that mountain range is the youngest in the U.S. I think so.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
It's just so cool up there, dude.
But yeah, it is, man. We used to go on camping trips up there. Like I think for like 7 years in a row, me and my two buddies, and like we wow. just like explored all of the, you know, peaks and everything that we possibly could up there. Sick. It's just yeah. Pure wilderness yeah. and very easy to get lost. There's yes. another really crazy book called Mercy of the Mountains. And it's like all these like tragedies that happen. Up
luckily
there.
Not Teddy
like,
Roosevelt.
Like, there's a lot. So it's like pretty, yeah, no, right. But it's pretty wild up there. So it's just, yeah, you can get yourself into some trouble if you're not safe, but it's yeah. just, it's yeah. beautiful.
That's freaking
it.
Awesome, dude. When's the last time you've been up there? Do you remember?
Yeah.
Like a while back?
Before I had kids for sure. I don't even know yeah. if I was, maybe I was married the last time. So maybe like 10 years wow. ago. I've been married for like 11 years. So like maybe about like 10 years ago.
All right. I think so we got to get our pod up there one.
It's time, yeah. man. We should go. Yeah. We should go.
I would love
there.
To, dude. I want to go up there every year. Kind of like same thing with you. Cause like the first time I went up, I'm like, I can't touch all this in a weekend. Like you need, like you could live up here for years and not see everything up here. Like it's that yeah, vast, man. You know? So
it is, it's wild. It really is. I know the one time we were below Whiteface Mountain, and we like camped out on this little peninsula. Like, so there were two branches of the Sac that were like coming down.
So you really roughed it.
Just
yeah,
amazing.
You guys really roughed it then. Okay. That's yeah. sick.
Yeah. I mean, it was a campsite, you know, like, so it wasn't like terrible, but it was, I mean, it was out. I mean, we were out. I mean, we stayed in tents. Like, you know, it wasn't until like the last, I think, year. We were like, you know, they have these cabins, you know, tent camping yeah. sucks. Like,
right. you know, this isn't fun.
And one year we went and yeah, it rained, like, we were there for 7 days, and it rained, five straight days
damn.
In a row. And that was, like, after that year, we were like, that's it. Like, we're going to get a cabin. Like,
we're done.
It was, like, our tent, everything, our clothes, everything was soaking wet. You could not stay dry. That was definitely a turning point where we were like, we could tax it up
right.
a little
make
bit.
A little splurge.
Get a little shelter, you know, like maybe get a lean-to or something, but you know, it was just miserable that trip, but and good times, but still miserable.
You look back, it's like you'll learn from your mistakes, so it's okay.
Yeah, yeah. All right, man. Well, hey, why don't we talk?
I'm down, dude. Yeah. So a little bit about what we're going to be doing here, everyone, is me and Matt are going to bring a different topic to each other pretty much every single episode and kind of surprise each other. So we don't know what we're going to really talk about. So we're going to have some fun with it. Matt's got his topic. I've got mine. And I don't know who's going to go first. So Matty boy, what do you want to go first or want me to dive right in for us and see what we got?
Why don't you go ahead, Nick? Let's see
all right. All right. I'm nervous, but I don't really care. I'm still having fun. So it's all good. All right. So my topic today is going to be, and I'm knowing me because I'm a tech nerd, want to talk about this in other episodes. But today we're going to talk a little bit about EV cars, about a really cool news article that I just found.
Nice.
So get this, my man. So officially, roughly a couple months ago, GM, as in General Motors, recently just announced that they are going to be investing $35 billion, with a B, 90s, on full EV tech, including their EV infrastructure and their cars. And they are looking to go fully electric by the year 2030. So they're basically trying to replace every single one of their cars. That includes the Hummer EV, like everything, the gas guzzling cars that they have, like wow. Silverado. They're basically redoing their entire infrastructure all around EV tech.
Wow.
So that's like their new business model. One thing that I just saw too that was really cool, they're actually like redesigning the like EV battery. And like, I definitely want to dive into this a little bit more at another date and just see a little bit more about it. But they're basically trying to make like a really like reusable platform for other EV cars and like use something called like the Ultium battery. So I guess it could be like really interchangeable with like other cars as well. And just like use that tech for other companies trying to like follow suit, I guess, if they don't have that tech yet for cars.
So not just GM vehicles, like other like a Ford or, you know,
I believe
Chevy
so.
Hop on board. They can
yeah. So like,
that
I believe
out. Now that would
yes.
be, yeah, that would be awesome. And it's funny because I thought that this was the mm-hmm. case that and for some reason in my mind, I was thinking 2050, but 2030 sounds a lot better.
Yeah.
And now that you're actually saying this, I can say that like what I did here, I felt like it was a couple of years ago, and I remember telling my father-in-law about it, and he was just like, no way.
It's not happening.
And I was just like, yeah, maybe not, you know, like maybe, because that does sound like a big, but 2030, man, that's coming up. That's not that far away.
Dude,
so it is
years.
True. It is happening. 2030. Yeah.
That's what they say. And like,
that's going to be a huge change.
And like, I don't know exactly how far they'll get, but like, dude, like, I don't see it not happening. You know, I mean, like, just the way that everything's going, right. Like, I try to stay up with this stuff a lot. Like, I don't, like, and again, dude, like, you and I know this, like, there's a lot of reasons to be morbid and a lot of things going on with, especially with carbon emissions and everything. But like, we're really on the cusp of like a green EV revolution. Like, it's really happening, you know? And like, the thing that makes me really excited and pumped, dude, is like the fact that the cost is coming down on these things. You know, like, when it used to just be like a Tesla Model 3, like, big Tesla fan, like, those cars are badass, you know, but like, not every single person can go spend 90-100K on the Model X, you know, but now the Model 3 is coming out, like, Chevy's got the Chevy Bolt, like, the Ford F-150, like, starting is like 45K before the tax rebates, like, things are happening, you know, and like, we've gotten to the point, like, where I'm excited about, it was expensive because the tech still had to get built out, and like, the level of the manufacturing and mass production, like, still wasn't there. But like, that infrastructure is getting built out to like make it go exponentially higher at this point. So like, once we get it to that point, like, the reason why cars are cheap today, it's like, we have the infrastructure because the more you produce at a higher scale, the cheaper than every single item can be. So we're getting to that point with EV where we're going to be seeing cars really soon for 20-25K, and like, it's happening, you know? And like, I think all these companies know this, and like, it's happening. And like, coming from a really big like car junkie, like, I'm a big car guy. American Muscle will always be close to me, but like, dude, these things haul ass. Like, the thing with EV tech, like, when you have a traditional motor, like a V8, when you put your foot on the gas, you have horsepower right away, but the torque delays. The thing with EV is, once you put your foot on the gas, the electric motor, it doesn't have any delay. So you get that automatic push, like, right from the torque and horsepower. So, like, these things are going to wipe out, like, gas-powered cars anyway. Like, they can't compete, you know? Like, it's just, they're badass. That's awesome.
That's great to hear, because my old job was driving a Prius, and I always mm-hmm. would forget that you would have to really step on the gas, and there is a delay compared to like a combustible engine,
yes.
like a gas engine. So like, when you're first driving it, you don't think anything. Like, I can make this, I can pull out before this car would ring me, and you would step on the gas.
I can step out of the car right now and just start walking.
Those 2 seconds are very critical when you're trying to cut
right.
someone.
When some jalopy is like cutting you off in the shoulder, I would cut him off too. Son of a bitch.
When you think you got this, you're like, oh, I can make it. That guy's going a little too slow.
Yeah.
No, but so it's great to hear that they're finally catching up, man. Because that's pretty critical, you know? That's important information.
No, dude, it's true. And like, that's like coming from me. I'm like, okay, like, this is all cool and like dandy, but like, 15 years ago, like, none of these cars were cool. I'm like, all right, like, these like kind of suck. Like, dude, like, not for nothing, like, the range was big too. Like, that's another thing that's like really starting to blow out of the gate. Like, back in the day, like 10, 15 years ago, you would maybe get 80 to 100 miles of range fully charged. It's like, dude, what if your commute's like 50 right. miles? Like, that's not that bad of a commute. Like, 50 minutes to an hour on the highway.
Well, they're going to be placing, you know, like charging stations more often too. So the infrastructure has to change, you know?
Yes.
You know, back to the example. You know, I've heard this before. I forget what book this was in, but just, you know, you think about, like, you know, well, they had to make all of, like, when they were, like, Rockefellers, you know, day and age, think about how they had to change the whole entire infrastructure, like, putting all these pipes together, underground, you know, going across the country, like,
these paths weren't built yet.
Like, so,
you know, like, it takes that big momentum to get it to the point where everyone can then use it, so... Yeah. And that was one thing in the article too, dude, that I was saying for GM, like, they're not only doing that, but like, they're also extending out like 40,000 charging stations just from like GM side. And I know Ford is doing a similar thing. Like, maybe I'll talk about that on another one, but like, it's happening, you know, like, these infrastructure are getting built out, and like, I'm trying to pay attention more. Like, dude, my apartment just built two of them out here. Like, we're really early on, but it's exciting because the more like affordable these things get and the more tech that can be put in at a cheaper cost, like, it's going to catch on. Like, I really think most of the country is going to be driving EVs probably by 2040, dude. Like, 2030 might be a little tough, you know, like, especially if people are getting brand new cars right now, like 2023, 24 for gas. Like, you know, cars have what, 7 to 10 years of life. So you're going to keep that for a while if you take good care of that thing. But by 2040, dude, like, it's going to be tough to say no. Like, once that infrastructure is there and people that have charging at stations at home, like, it's going to change the game. And then apartments just have to catch on, get a couple more on. Like, sure. We're getting there, and it's exciting.
Now, I'm wondering, have you heard anything about, like, Honda or, like, Toyota or anything? Because I thought they would have been the leaders in this, but for some reason, I haven't really heard too much about
that. It's really funny you say that, because I was looking at that myself, and not really too much. I know Toyota has a couple more, Honda not so many, but, like, I really think they're just starting to get to that point, you know? Like, I mean, dude, this is big stuff. Like, you have to really reinvigorate your entire, like, manufacturing lineup, you know? Like, it's, you really have to build this stuff out. So, like, they're probably in that stage, if I had to guess. Like, it's going to happen, it's inevitable, you know? Like, especially because I feel like you said, Honda and Toyota, like, they're known for having, like, eco-friendly cars and, like, having good gas mileage. So, like, they know that they have that part of the market and audience, like, ready to buy, especially from Honda customers. So, like, it's inevitable for that to happen. I just don't think they're there yet on the infrastructure yet. Like, it seems like a lot of that is, like, especially for GM, I saw that they're, like, investing heavily in an area in Tennessee, I believe. Like, that seems to be, like, a really, like, green hub. I don't know exactly what part, probably outside of Nashville or something, or Knoxville, but I think they'll get there, dude. It's just going to take time, you know? And, like, everything with the supply chain from COVID and everything that really turned everything on its head, like, they're probably still ironing all that stuff out. I can't even imagine how complicated that stuff is, you know? So,
right.
But they got to get there.
No, it's pretty cool, man. I'm glad it's coming to fruition. Now, all right, now I'm going to play devil's advocate here because this is something that was brought up to me when I started talking about it. I remember telling somebody that I used to work with, I'm like, oh yeah, you know, like electric cars. And he's like, you know what, man? He's like, it sounds good in theory and all, you know, but we're still mining for the lithium, you know, in other countries that don't have the environmental regulations to, you know, in place. So, like, we're going in there. Not we, but who knows who we are. I mean,
you need these resources.
In there, ripping apart their land without, you know, environmental protection, you know, any kind of regulations happening to rip out the lithium to put in our EV cars. Now, do you know anything about that? I have not looked into that at all. And I, you know, it's definitely something I want to, you know.
Yeah, no, me too, dude. And like, I haven't dived into it too much yet myself. But what I will say, it's like, I think that there's options for that. Like, dude, the thing what needs to happen is like, everyone just needs to be accounted for. You know, like if we're going in there, like I think back like when we were mining coal, you know, it's like there's got to be, you need more innovation at the actual mining site. Like we shouldn't be going in and just tearing up communities to get these resources, you know, like if there's other ways around that.
And I feel like we know how to do that. We should. Now. We know how to like protect the landscape. So the fact that we're going in there and not doing that drives me crazy. Cause we know how to do it. We have it. It's all laid out. I can lay down a map for you right now. I used to do that at my old job, you know, how to, you know, erosion and sediment control, stuff like that.
Right. Come
I can
on.
Lay out a whole entire plan of how to just keep the dirt out of the water.
Right.
You know, so if they don't even have that going on, that's like,
and there needs
that's
to be
scary,
some blame, you know, but, like that's the thing. It's like, if that's happening, like, I mean, dude, at the end of the day, like business is about profit. Right. So it's like, if they're getting more money, it's like, there's no reason you still can't just invigorate those communities around there. And like you said, innovate, you know, like if we're doing that in the incorrect way, like I'm sure a lot's just hushed under the rug, you know, like that's probably going to be inevitable, but like there needs to be regulations for that, dude, you know, because like if those are places where the economy is like really suffering regardless, like you have a really prime opportunity to go to those spots with those precious minerals and make that community lively. Like that could be your big hub and like a really great economic growth factor for them. I agree. You know, like there's no reason why we can't do that. And then going off of that as well, the other thing is like we shouldn't just like only focus on EV. Like there's other technology that's green that could also get built out. And like, we'll definitely talk about this on another one, but like, for example, hydrogen, that's a great resource that we can just use. And like, dude, on my way to my old job before, like there was a refueling station from the county here and there was like a hydrogen, just like station, just like right next to the gas station. It's like, and I think the only emission that comes out of hydrogen fuel for cars, like run the same exact way. It's just like a combustion engine just built a little way to, you know, filter out the hydrogen and use that as the fuel source. But the only emission is water vapor. So if we can do that, like you're taking away the area where we don't have to use all those precious minerals. It's like, if we're doing that correctly and like environmentally friendly and ethically, fine. Like that's good and invigorating that area. But if we're not, like we also just can't rule out other energy sectors where we have all of this potential to also have sustainable infrastructure in that way too. You know, like I think at the end of the day, it's just tough. I mean, like there's no easy way around this because it's such a complicated problem. Because the other problem is, let's say we don't go get those minerals. And like, again, we absolutely without a doubt should be doing that the right way. But if we don't, and then the climate crisis gets worse and carbon emissions get worse because of our traditional grid, then now all those communities are going to suffer, especially if they're near the water and sea levels rise and everything. And now they're doomed regardless. So it's like, do we do a little, and like, this is really just an open question. Like, do we do a little bit of damage now, like, and then avoid a massive problem? Or like, do we just like flip the coin? You know, it's like, I don't think either way is better. Like, I think that there's plenty of talent and plenty of science and plenty of technology that you can kind of use both of those. You know, like, to me, the clearer path is go in there. Like, we can use those minerals in a sustainable way. Don't harm the people there. Let them build their community around that spot and create really great jobs the correct way, you know, and give them the resources that they need to be safe while doing it. And then while doing that, you're also completely reinvigorating the grid for clean tech for the future of everyone, you know? So
yeah,
that's where I'm at with it, man.
I think that, like you said, the main thing, it certainly has to be that the minerals are going to be extracted properly and like in an environmentally friendly way. And that the communities aren't just getting destroyed. And these, I mean, maybe I don't know. I should probably research this topic myself a little bit more. But even where the regions are or where they're actually mining, I don't know if they're, you know, do they have communities like, you know, like we do, or are they people who don't want to have anything to do with the modern world and we're going in there and destroying their landscape,
decimating it, because we think we have the rights to it when we don't, you know. And then the other thing.
Which, you know, something that we've done before.
This isn't our first rodeo doing that in the U.S. Like, definitely a stain on us there.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, definitely a cut deep. It's not right. Yeah, it's tough, dude. Like, I really agree. I really agree with that. And I think one of the problems that if I'm sure we are, like, I don't have the full data on that, but I'm sure we're going into these areas in some ways not the right way. And the problem is, or I mean, it's good and bad, right? It's like, this tech is growing at a very fast rate, and that's great. But I don't feel like that gives science and like the standards a chance to catch up. I mean, government has a lot of red tape. So to get those policies in effect and have that voted on and all of those steps that need to come where it's like, this is how you need to mine it. Like the demand is so high for it. It's like, I feel like that's also getting in the way and just pushing all of those policies that need to be in place in a sustainable and ethical manner, just kind of out the gate. Cause it's like, well, we have to get these now. It's like, no, like we have a very, very nice, like rare opportunity to do it just, you know, just to do it there just and like fast way in a great way. So yeah, I mean, we should, hopefully we get there. Right. Like I'm definitely going to look into that a little bit more myself. And like, I wonder, I don't know exactly where.
That could be part two of this conversation.
Yeah, kind of seeing what's going on there.
You know, cause it's a good follow. Yeah. It's something that I always wanted to,
the other side of EV tech.
Because I mean, this is, you have to look at the good and the bad and figure out like, all right, well, are we really doing what's best for the world right now? Or are we just, you know, trying to figure out another way to make money, you know, and which unfortunately, like you said, money talks. So
I think it's a little bit of both, dude. It's a mixed bag, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and I do agree that, you know, like the carbon emission, like we got to get off fossil fuels. That's a
good thing. That's like the number one, the way, like that's got to go, you know, but you can't harm people in the process of that either, you know? So.
Right. Or the landscape, you know, like in the name of environmentally friendly cars, like, you know, like, oh, we're just going to destroy this over here. But while over here, we're going to make our, you know, air a little bit cleaner. You know? So we just, again, making sure that we're doing it properly in the right way. And, you know, I'm good with it, you know, but if it's not, then you know, we definitely need to, you know, raise a voice and, you know, come together and be like, hey, you know, this isn't what was. You know, it's proposed in one way, but this is not what's actually happening. We really got to, you know, stand our ground.
Yeah. And that's the thing, there's other repercussions on that too. It's like, let's say you get the EV car and it's mined in the way it's supposed to, and the car was produced well, you know, and ethically and just.
Yeah,
it's great.
Fantastic.
But then on the other side, if you're charging it, I don't think people realize like that electricity comes from somewhere, and it's probably coming from fossil fuels like natural gas, et cetera. Like natural gas is an energy source. It releases like, I think it's something crazy, like 50, 60% less emissions than coal. For the most part, but it's still release emission. I mean, it's nowhere close to wind and solar, you know? So it's like, it's just a full reinvigoration of the grid, dude. It's like, that's a topic for a whole other talk. But I mean, from GM's side, some really cool cars coming out the gate, some really cool things and nice innovation coming there. So hopefully we're seeing a really nice cusp on that. So yeah.
Yeah. Overall, it sounds like, you know, positive, you know, impact. And well, I don't want to say positive impact just yet, but yeah,
kind of right direction.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like we're moving in the direction that we really want to be going in, it sounds like. So hopefully that'll continue. And like we were saying, just as long as it's being done properly, you know, good for GM.
Agreed, dude. Let's see other companies hop on that wagon, you know, good stuff.
Yeah.
Got to see those EVs.
Very cool. All right, man. So that was, I like where that went.
Nice
so
first
I'm going
to
say that I'm going to, you know, I'm going to, I'm gonna really brighten the mood and talk about the insect apocalypse.
Oh yeah, I'm getting all hot and jittery inside,
in
baby.
Right now, all right. I knew.
I'm like, there's no way he's not talking about our bugs right now. There's no way.
It's insane. Can I just say,
go for it, bro? Lay it on me.
It's insane.
Yeah,
like
splatter them on me.
So a little bit of my background. For those of you who don't know, I was an environmental educator for a while, and my boss. At the time had said like, hey, you know, we're going to be doing this program for a certain group and they want to do a topic on, you know, the decline of pollinators. And I was like, decline of pollinators,
this is
you know,
be a
like,
fun day.
Not really thinking too much of it. I'm like, all right, yeah. So, you know, and I'm like, how much information could I really find? So all you have to do is just go to Google and just type in
okay,
insect decline or decline of pollinators, or just type in the word pollinator and then just look at
not even a lead for Google, like just mind-blowing. Just pollinator.
Oh my God. No. Like, just type in the word P and the first thing that comes
well,
in.
Maybe not that, but
just type in the letter P. Yeah. And that's it. Yeah. The letter P.
Oh my God.
Just, and it's just like, yeah, pollinators. And it's terrible. So, so there are a lot of studies in 2019 biological conservation.
Okay.
All right. They reported that 40% of our insects worldwide are in decline. Now,
40?
I'm going to just say this. Well, here's what I'm going to say about that. So I've looked at so many other studies and so many other reports, and that's like the roundabout number. Now, there's going to be people who are like, well, you know, what about like in certain areas where like, are they studying this around the whole entire globe with this study that they did on a specific species or multiple species across a certain area that could account for the insects around the world? So there's a lot of studies that are saying at least 40% are on decline.
Dude.
Now, a lot of it came from like the 1970s. So starting from like the 70s on, things just started drastically dropping. All right. So there was the one meme that I showed you. Like, if you think about it, when you're driving, right, back in the day when I was a kid, my parents were driving around, bugs were smashing the windshield all the time. All right. So I sent you that meme of the person driving in like 1984, right? Yeah. And there's just bugs smeared all over the windshield and people are mad. And then like the next meme was like in 2000, there were like no bugs on the windshield and the guy was like smiling, happy.
Yay.
And then in 2030, it was just a picture of the car because there were no people, right? So
was it you and the Toyota Prius? Did you step out?
Well, right.
Yeah. The bugs were there. We're just mad at the leaf.
You don't. Yeah, right. Well, no, here's the thing about this. So this is what's so crazy is that so the pollinators, right? So it's just like insects, pollinators. We don't realize how there are millions of species of insects that haven't even been discovered yet. And what's happening is, you know, things like habitat loss, pesticides. And the third main one, of course, is climate change. All right. So or if we talk about habitat loss, so of course, the first thing you would think of is like, all right, they're tearing down forests and putting up, you know, a Lowe's in a big parking lot. But if you think about like where most pollinators are, they're in big open fields, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're mowing your grass too often, you have acres of land that are just being mowed all the time. Well, that's pollinator habitat. That's insect habitat. Mm-hmm. And if you wanted to, you know, they always say that like, hey, if you do no mow May, which I tried doing and, mm-hmm. you know, let them bloom June, you don't cut your grass for a while. You know, it's not necessarily practical when you're living in town. But if you have a section that you, you know, could just let
25%
grow,
of your
lawn
or something.
But the main issue though, is that it's fragmented then. So if you think about these tiny little insects, a lot of them don't fly. Even pollinators, you think of bees,
that's a great point,
you know,
bro.
Maybe flies, right? But like beetles, you know, they don't, well, some of them do, but like some beetles don't, ants, you know, like other things like that. They don't necessarily fly around pollinating like you would think of, you know, like a bee would, a honeybee. So if you are looking at a parcel of land, and you know, you're looking at this one section like, all right, I didn't mow this section of my lawn, but like neighbors like maybe 2, 3, 4 houses down from you, you know, they have a little patch. Well, for that little bug to like make its way all the way down to that little habitat, I mean, that's a long trek. You know, so you're thinking that like it's a lot of energy that they're wasting and or they're using just to get to where they need to go.
Yeah,
man. And it's just what's crazy about it is it's happening at a huge, massive scale. So habitat loss and fragmentation, that's probably one of the bigger causes.
Okay.
All right. And then you're looking into things like pesticides. All right. Now, I don't mean to pick on agriculture, but
that's where my head went,
because
honestly.
Where are most, I mean, where are most pesticides being applied?
Yeah.
You know, massive scale.
Yeah.
And that's
not
the one
patch of crabgrass in your backyard.
Agriculture,
like, this is probably millions of tons of this stuff.
The whole basis of life pretty much starts off with these pollinators, with insects. If there are no insects, there's no other life. And there's actually a picture that I saw in China. It's so bad that a lady was standing, looked like a magnolia tree. I'm sure it wasn't a magnolia tree. It was some kind of fruit bearing tree or some kind of food tree. And she was up on these limbs, man, with a paintbrush, tickling these flowers to pollinate it, like hand pollinating.
No, stop. No, she wasn't.
That's what the, that's
stop. Dude, where did we go wrong? This is asinine.
And I was like, you can't do this. Like, just, yeah, that's not sustainable. Right? She's going to fall over.
Right.
You know,
right. Like, that's not safe.
Like, it's so dangerous. So, like, yeah. So, like, this is
wow.
Like, what's actually happening.
Oh, my right. God.
No, man. So, it's like, it's mind blowing. So, here's the other thing that not all pesticides kill, and you're like, hey, hooray. But any kind of trace of that stuff that gets into their system, it can cause brain damage. It can cause them to be disoriented, and it can just cause them to not be themselves. They just get sick. Right. So, even though it doesn't kill them, it's not lethal. It essentially will be.
It completely disables
not that
them.
Much longer down the road, not that further.
Basically,
down the road. Exactly. It's just. Yeah. So, and that also goes for like herbicides, man. Like anything you're putting into the environment. So it's just like one of those things where you don't really think about it, but you kind of have to because it's happening. You know, this is what's happening, and really, it's true, man. If you look outside. Yeah. You know, I'm not getting bit nearly as much as I was when I was out in the woods or, you know, when you go to a gas station, I remember the mayflies used to just be all over the place when we were pumping gas in the car when I was 16 years old.
Dude, it's funny you said that because I was thinking the same thing. It's just like, I go outside now. It's like, I was even thinking back to like, you know, just like a kid, like playing in the freaking ground, dude, like just being a freaking kid. And like, there was just bugs everywhere. It was just galore. Like ants like crawling around everywhere. It's like, now I really don't see freaking any ants. Like I see some of like the small little like colonies, but like, full adult size ones, really not too many. Like, dude, it's a rarity. And it's like, you should never, like, it doesn't seem like you should ever say bugs are rarity because that's like, I read some crazy stat. It's like, what, 70, 80% of all life on Earth? And it's like, if that's declining 30, 40%, like, that's not going to ever be able to retain the other 20 to 30 that are relying on it, you know? So, and the other thing is too, with the pesticides, like, there's bugs out there that they just do a good job of, like, keeping away other pests. Like, it's almost like your immune system. It's like everyone's got good germs on them to keep away some bad germs. It's like, one, you just need germs, but it's like, I think the same applies with some crops. Like, that's why regenerative agriculture works in some ways. It's like, you can leave it the way it is and just let the ecosystem take care of itself, you know? And that just further increases the crop that way too. And like, I've seen before too, it's like, if you have really good soil integrity, like I saw a picture on LinkedIn where like the roots went like 5 feet down for just like one patch of grass, it's like on traditional agriculture, it's like maybe a half a foot in. So it's like the root system is just completely debilitated because like you said, dude, if these chemicals are leaching into the ground and it's killing all those things in the microbes that are keeping that thing alive, you're not going to be able to do it. And then like, it's just so much, you're not going to get the best yield anyway. Like it's actually good for the like economics of agriculture to do this the right way, you know? And like, I don't know. Like, I mean, everything with droughts and everything happening around the world, like, I really hope that they catch on and just like see that's what they're going to need, you know, just to build that out and keep the structure maintained. But with everything like that, it's just like, I don't understand how, like, how is it even allowed? You know, it just blows my mind that you can even get away with that. Like, there's so many other ways to do that, like, that are proven, you know? Right. So, like, why are we in this situation?
So, yeah. So, pesticides, herbicides, habitat loss, and then of course the last one is climate change. All right, so as you know, things are shifting, you know, climates are completely altering, things are getting warmer, things are getting colder, you know,
and it's always countries that are already struggling, dude, you know, like hard hurricanes. Haiti gets decimated. It's like it took so long to get to that point, like and then one storm just wipes them out and they have to like start over. Like people don't understand, like these are the people, like everyone, these are all people, and they're all hurting, and it's like those are the countries that suffer, and it's not right. You know, because they're built on those areas.
It's so, I mean, I know it's changing. So in all different areas, all different regions, things are happening. Things are, you know, dry places are getting wet places are getting dry. Things are getting, you know, swapped all over the place. So because of that, it's really messing up with the whole entire system. If we don't try to do something, like it's we literally are not going to have a life here on this planet because it can't exist without them. I even saw, like, you know, thinking you're about like the insects, it's the bugs that like decay things, that break dead animals down. Like imagine if there was just like dead deer all over the place and nothing to eat them and break them down. Like, you know, like
bugs are responsible
for
that,
the whole thing.
You know, like
they're responsible for so much, man. It's just like there's a lot of there was a couple of books, there was one book I wrote it down here, I wanted to read it and I haven't, and I maybe for the next one, this is definitely a topic I would love to bring back again, but The Insect Crisis: The Fall of the Tiny Empires That Run the World. by Oliver Miller.
Wow.
And that's a book I certainly want to read. It's heartbreaking to think that we are just continuing to live our lives and go about our day without thinking of all these things that are happening in the background, not in front of our eyes, but like in this world of the environment. And, you know, we just take for granted so much in this country.
Yeah.
Things that we have,
we all have so much wealth,
and it's,
it is, man.
We do. And it's just, it bothers me a lot. And it's just, you know, one of the reasons why we wanted to start talking about this
bring some awareness on it.
I mean, it's not like people don't know it, but I don't know, getting it out there like,
and being consistent on it, dude, you know, because it's like, well, that's the other thing too, dude. Like you said on being loud, like if this stuff gets any attention, it's on, I mean, you might see it on a news recording or something really quick, but it's like, there's no consistency on it. Like you just hear about it once or twice and then like, it's just out of sight, out of mind. You know, like the stuff needs to be continuously brought up. Because, like, if it's not, then what happens? You know, like you said, like, you have to bring awareness to the issue. But, like, if we do nothing, then what? Like, we're screwed. You know, it's like, dude, that's been blowing my mind. Like, honestly, and it just pisses me off, to be honest. Like, I remember when we had all the Australian fires, right? With everything. And that's a whole other topic, too. But, like, with the Australian fires, dude, like, we lost, what, 1 billion animals? 1 billion animals. Can you imagine that happened to the human population? We lost 1 billion people. Right. Like with the pandemic, we lost millions. Right. Absolute tragedy. Like I would never say it's not. Like absolute. Like we're all still going through it in our own ways, and a lot of families were affected in terrible ways. Like would never underrule that. But if the human population lost 1/7 of its population in a month, I mean, dude, that would flip the world on its side. You know, and like that happened over there. No one even blinks an eye anymore, man. Like, when's the last time you heard about all that? Like, I couldn't even tell you, like, what's going on over there.
I can't. I can't tell you unless I had it, like, specifically went and looked it up.
Yeah.
But you're right. This stuff doesn't come up.
So, and then the amount of time it's going to take to, I mean, I don't know. I try to be, like, I'm a pessimistic optimist, I guess, at heart, like, with everything, like, just to, you know, I don't know. Like, it's just who I am. Like, I think we definitely can solve these problems. That's an absolute, like, fact. But the amount of work that is like ahead to get there is ridiculous. And like, we're just not putting enough attention on it. Like the whole world's not, you know,
well, we could really do a lot of, you know, we can do a lot with the human race, but we need to act. We need to get more people
and we
involved.
Wait too long.
I mean, because we could do it,
you know, we wait until something's like in our face. And that's the problem, dude. Like, especially with the US, it's like until it's in your face and it's affecting you directly, then all of a sudden people want to act. And I've thought this for a while with climate change, where it's just like, we're not going to do anything until literally things are like burning down to the ground. And then like at that point, how much damage is already done? It's going to take 100 to 200 years to like at least get back to the baseline, if we even can, you know? And like, what's the world going to look like after that, you know? And like, it's just, I mean, and we'll dive into this on other episodes, dude, but it's just, I mean, going back to everything with bugs, like these are literally the bedrock of like ecosystems. And the whole thing that we're trying to talk about you guys too is if you take one of those things out, especially one of the main frameworks, like imagine a house on its foundation, you're basically taking the foundation away from the house. If there's no foundation there, it's gone. And like bugs are the foundation at the end of the day. Like it doesn't sound cool, doesn't sound attractive or sexy or anything, but it's just the damn truth. Like everything relies on them, from all little critters that we all love and all know and love to all the animals that eat those critters and just continue the cycle on. But then those bugs, like Matt just said, decompose those critters. You know, it's just all a freaking cycle. And if you take that out, nothing else can keep it going. It's just putting a wedge into a massive rotating machine. And if you put that in, like everything else stops in its tracks. And then what's the damage after that? You know, like you're turning off the faucet to the whole world. Yeah, and it's not good. We need
to wake up, you know, we need to like realize that these are real issues, you know, and if we don't act, we don't do something about it. If we don't, you know, public outcry to stop neonicotinoids from being used in agriculture on a massive scale,
we're done.
You know, here's the thing. The research is out there. You know, why is this still allowed?
Money, dude.
Why?
Money.
You know, it makes zero sense.
Funding.
And that's the thing, you know, and again, there's so many different ways to integrate a pest management system is, you know, I'm all for it. You're doing everything to specifically address a problem. You're not just blanketly just putting stuff, you know, you're not taking any kind of preventative measures, right? Because you can't do that. That's not sustainable.
Right.
So, and that's the world we live in, but that's how we've been doing it. And it's just getting worse and worse. We take, you know, they're coating seeds with pesticides, right? Just so like
come
just
on.
Assuming that there's going to be a problem. So I'm going to plant this seed, you know, that's coated in a pesticide in the ground, and there may not even be an issue. But and then you're actually affecting non-targeted species. So yes. It's just like it just doesn't.
You're messing
end,
up the seed.
So you can't do like, that,
right?
Know? Right.
And not for nothing. Like I hate to tell you, I would way rather eat a bug than what's sprayed on this crap, dude. Like I would rather eat a worm coming out of my apple than something coated in chemicals. Like sorry, but it's the damn truth. Like Give me the worm any day. Well, here's
you know what? It's funny that you say that though, because like it was. I think there was another statistic that said about like 40 to 50% of all of us are now like eating like these neonicotinoids. These neonics in our foods, they're making their way into our foods. So even if you like, you can't scrub, you know, you can't, it goes into everything. Already. You can't like scrub
it's
it
part
off.
Of
you
the
can't
food.
Peel the skin off. It's in the makeup of the food right now. And then I know like kids are having a bigger problem with it, like baby foods and stuff like that. That was like, they're even more affected by it.
They're growing and developing, and, that's serious.
Right. And I know like it does like, you know, it messes with your muscles, your brain, your joint, like all of that. So it has like effects on humans as well. Not as deadly, but definitely not, you know, helpful.
Right.
You know, I'm taking, you know, omega-3 vitamins to help myself, and then I'm eating an apple that's filled with neonics, and I'm just like, just cancel that.
Right. You know, like, you can't be healthy, you know, just, like, you, no matter what you try. And it was funny because, like, one of my friends said,
and who wants that?
Oh, like, I want to know, like, at least what I'm eating is real. You know, like, it always blows my mind where it's like, we've gotten to a point in the world where, like, if you know you're eating something good, it has to say, like, certified organic. Like, everything should be organic. Right. It should never have been anything else. Right. That should never be something that you need to certify. Like everything should be that, you know? But dude, like, and the thing that makes me hopeful on that is the fact like, and again, like I guess playing devil's advocate on that, cause like, this is such a tragedy, but like just like a beacon of light, like, and like, I really mean this, like, dude, think about maybe 5 to 6, even 7 years ago, right? How many items did you see on the shelf that were labeled like certified organic or fair trade or anything like that? It was slim to none, you know? So again, like we were saying on everyone raising their voice, and like, I truly mean this to everyone that says something, it's like, you really vote. Like when you go to the store, it's like, if you choose like, and like, it sucks because sometimes this is more expensive than what it should be just because you have to get that higher quality. Cause that's just the way the system is right now, unfortunately. But like, if we keep buying the good stuff and like showing these massive conglomerate companies, like what we want to stand for, that's when things start to change, you know? Like, dude, some stupid example, like toilet paper. Now we have bamboo toilet paper and bamboo paper towels, which is tree-free, and bamboo grows 6 to 12 feet, you know, a year. And, like, we can go over that on another episode. But it's, like, my point is just, like, when you – like, you can raise your voice by just buying the products that you stand for. And, like, that actually might be the easiest way to do it because, dude, at the end of the day – what fixes this damn problem is getting into the pockets of the mass conglomerates that are doing this. So that's really how you can raise a voice without even having to raise your voice. Go and buy the things that are like certified to that. If you can afford it, like I would never put pressure on that way because like it's not easy. And I understand that like money's hard to come by right now for everybody. But by doing that and raising your voice, like showing what you want to stand for, when those kinds of companies start to take the market share away from the big boys, things will start to change, and they have already started to change in other sectors, and in like food, I don't think it's inevitably far away if we keep doing that way. There's so much work to do, it's not even funny. But if there's one beacon of light, it's the fact that you and I can go into the store and buy the products that we want to stand for and show the big companies like this is the stuff that we want to see and get them with the program. So
yeah, amen, brother. I mean, I couldn't agree more. I think that, you know, if the slightest thing that you can do is maybe just choose for a more organic option if you could, like you said, afford it. Because understandably, not everybody can always buy organic all the time,
right?
You know, but that's a good way. I never even really thought about that. You know, I'm always thinking like, well, we got to get political. You know, we got to public outcry. We got to get out there. You know, we got to go march at the White House, but. You're right, man. We can do it just by hitting the pocketbooks, just by, you know, I'm not buying your product. I
go right around that
instead. Yep. You know, and get buying local, man, buying fresh, buying local, that whole entire campaign, like buy fresh, buy like, you know, just, I so wish. And I've said this for years that we went back to that where like, we just bought neighborly food from everybody. Like
everyone's got their own crop or something.
Know, so much. Right. You know, like, and here's the thing too with agriculture. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to be picking on agriculture by any means.
But this
here.
Is a massive
I mean,
God problem. Knows we like need this isn't. We yeah, need, it's not the farmer.
But,
it's not. We're not even talking about the farmer.
Here's the thing, right? But we don't need all of this food planted because how much of it gets thrown away and wasted?
Yep.
You know, like so. We, like if we just have these small little plots within each community, I mean, yeah, I may not get my avocado, which I get would be a really hard thing, but I would rather not eat that.
Or just eat it in season.
And just eat locally. Like, eat it in season, or just like scale it back a little. Like, we don't need to be so like gluttonous, you know? We don't need to have, I don't need to go to the grocery store in February and buy a cob of corn. I don't need that. I'm okay if it's not there, you know? Like,
ratio, I don't need
you know? I'm okay if I go there and somebody bought chicken before me, like, you know, shame on me for not getting the store earlier. And there just doesn't have to be chicken on the shelf, you know? Like, I'm sorry, I missed it. You know, it doesn't mean,
doesn't mean your life sucks. Like, it's okay.
that's I think that's a bigger problem, because then we're trying to force all these, you know, oh, we need to plant more, we need to take down more land, we need to do more agriculture. Yep. But if we just stop wasting the food that we're, you know, how much food gets thrown away? You know, that could be, again, another topic for conversation for another day. That's just like, it's mind boggling. But I mean, so yeah, so I think, you know, the decline of insects and pollinators is definitely something we really need to pay more attention to, because it's happening. And it's happening fast. Just one quick positive thing before, you know, we end it, is that the great thing about insects is that their lifespan is very short. So if we stop now, it will not take long for them to repopulate and get back to, you know, normal levels.
Their life cycles are shorter, so they can respawn faster, or spawn. We're not playing Halo, but
so we need that to happen. But we need to cut back on everything bad that we're doing to them. And it doesn't look like we're going in that direction anytime soon, which is scary.
Wow, man. I mean, and it's true. Like you said, like, and I'm sure people that are listening to this right now, or that will, is like, they can go in their backyards and see this, like, the scale that this is. Like, if they really start to think about it 5-10 years ago, it's like, wow, yeah, like, maybe I am seeing more bugs. Like, it's that, you know? So, and like, we just got to keep awareness on there, and like, hopefully we'll get there, dude. And I think we will, but there's a lot to do, you know? There's still a lot of work ahead, and hopefully we can get there. But like, they're just so important to everything that we do. And it's like, even if you don't realize how important they are, like, they're a part of your life in some way or another, whether you went to the grocery store or just went in your backyard and, you know, were picking flowers. Like, it's that simple. So just shedding some light on that, I think, is important. So that's a great article, dude. And we'll definitely dive into all those other subsectors that we were talking about on other ones, because I mean, I think everyone's going to realize this too. It's like, the more we talk on all these really different trends, like, they all correlate and intertwine with each other so much. It's hard not to kind of go into those things, because like we said, it's all part of the same cycle, and we're just trying to bring light on those different things that you might not see in different ways. So, but great article, Matt. That was an awesome one.
Very cool. Yeah. Very cool, man. Well, this was good. So I'm glad we did this. We've been talking about doing a podcast for, I don't even know how long, since we first talked on the phone, years ago. So
this is big.
It's been a while. This is big. And I'm glad this is the first step. So first episode, I'm glad it's, you know, under our belts.
Check one.
I think, you know, it's only going to get more fun from here on out.
That's tough to say, because I had a blast tonight.
I'll get my lighting situation figured out, and I won't be standing in on my back porch. It'll convert it. This is going to be a progress to see how my recording studio is going to shape up over the next couple of episodes.
Oh my god.
But right now it's just a back porch, and I'm like knee deep in kids' toys and I don't know. Coolers and tennis rackets. So
oh my God.
I can't move from this spot. I haven't. I can't even sit.
I believe it. So
that's a baby stroller behind me there.
Before we hopped on, everyone, like, Matt was trying to hang his light up, and like, I think it looks great. It's fine. Like, the light's great, but like, he's got a light above him right now, and like, you can't really tell, but like, we're on this journey to Earth, uncovering the planet. We're also going to uncover Matt getting his studio set up. And next episode, we're hoping for a couple hooks from the ceiling and maybe a swing that he can hang back and forth on and a place to sit in his backyard. Way more looking forward to that than whatever we uncover next week. But awesome, dude. Well, I guess we'll end it here, right?
Sure. Sounds like a plan.
Awesome.
You know, until next time, looking forward to it. Definitely a lot more to uncover.
Awesome, dude. Well, thank you to all who are listening. We're really honestly excited to have you here on our journey. And we're just going to keep uncovering the planet together. And we look forward to seeing you guys on our next episode of Journey to Earth. Take care, guys.